Malcolm Honlein is with us, Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations. We call this the weekly update here at JM in the AM. Mr. Honlein, welcome back to JM in the AM.
Thank you. Good to be with you again.
The numbers are staggering. We've this week surpassed a terrible milestone of 800 soldiers killed, over 5,400 wounded, and the estimate is that 12,000 have been affected in some way, whether it be a physical or mental situation that they're going through because of the war. In fact, it made me go back to the stats of the Yom Kippur War, and frankly, Malcolm, I didn't even realize how deadly that war was. We're not approaching those numbers yet, but we are approaching numbers that are very, very hard to believe. With all that in mind, I know that the U.S. envoy is pushing for peace and a ceasefire, and he was back and forth between Lebanon and Israel this week, and it seems like there's pressure from the current administration to get something done. Is there any update this week regarding the possibility of a ceasefire or some type of peace agreement?
Well, first, I think it's very important to remind people, as you just did, about the cost of this war. When we surpassed 800 soldiers killed and 900 orphans from them, and the number of widows left behind, as well as a large number of them, significant number, who are pregnant. So you'll have children born who will not know their father, that the cost that this will, Israel will bear for a long time for this. And yet you see the incredible heroism, the stoicism, the courage of the families at the funerals and thereafter. And we have to do as much as we can to make sure that they have the wherewithal, because what they get from the government is not enough to really sustain all of the families. So it's really a burden that all of Klal Yisrael should feel and make sure that we meet their needs. As far as the peace process, there too, on Lebanon, Amos Hochstein is in Israel right now. He was in Lebanon. The Lebanese keep changing the goalposts. They do now seem to be more ready for a deal of some kind, one that would eventually push them back behind the Litani, that would allow some civilians to come back to the south, but it would be under the control of the Lebanese army.
The north, yeah.
Army?
The north, you said south, you meant to go back to the north.
To come back to South Lebanon.
Oh, meaning I thought you meant Israeli.
The left side, right,
Israelis go back to the north. Sorry about that.
We'll get to the Israeli side in a minute, but this is from back to South Lebanon. Originally thought was that they would leave it open. Obviously, many of the villages and places have been leveled in order to clear the area of the terrorists and hopefully not to rebuild, so that you leave a buffer zone. There would be other requirements, including international obligations, which we know, well, over time, never really materialized that much. We see the impact of UNIFIL, which sits on its hands and which allowed the buildup over the rockets, even though under 1701, the UN resolution that came out of the last Lebanon war, they are not supposed to be there. They are they were supposed to prevent the movement of weapons and of troops, and we see obviously that did not happen at all. So there a framework seems to be emerging. I think Hezbollah feels the tremendous pressure. I think Iran does not want to have to invest in complete rebuilding. They are shifting, it seems, the focus to Iraq and to launching and wanting to launch attacks via Iraq, which has gotten warnings both from the United States and from Israel. Syria obviously has been upgraded in this regard, but Syria doesn't want to become the battleground and take the price anymore. They paid a pretty heavy price as it is. And Assad seems to be consolidating his position. We see the Russians expanding their role there. Of course, Iran seeking to take over and consolidate its position. They have lost huge amounts of weapons in trying to ship them, and what Israel did in taking out key locations and individuals plays a role. It's all related to your question, because you can't just pluck Lebanon out of the dynamics of what's going on in the north of Israel. And hopefully that will facilitate the return of the population, 60,000 to 80,000 people who would come back. Then on the Hamas side, there is increasing pressure. Israel has essentially neutralized Hamas to a degree. To a large degree, they still have the capacity to stage booby traps attacks and to hit troops, individual troops, in various locations and fight and regroup in small numbers of 100 or so, like in Jabalia. But Israel has essentially come close to the point of neutralizing them. And I think that a deal there could be in the works. The real key is on the hostages. And supposedly this week, there were some indications that they were prepared to talk about it.
Wow, interesting. Plus, Bibi actually announced a reward of $5 million for each hostage. I'm not sure how that reward works, whether it's for information that leads to their release or if it's actual, bringing a hostage home. Whatever it is, it was significant because of the number. And I guess he used it as an opportunity to show how serious he is about trying to get them home. And the story of the week, I guess, certainly the outrage that was felt around the world, is the ICC, the International Criminal Court, issuing arrest warrants for both Netanyahu and Gallant. Reaction from around the world and from some countries was outrageous. And I think the U.S. and its administration responded properly. You'll tell me if I'm right or wrong about that. What can you tell us about this latest news from the International Criminal Court?
People generally dismiss, when we talk, and we have for a long time on the show, warned about the ICC and ICJ, and people I know dismiss it. They don't understand the significance of a ruling like this. And the fact is that the consequences can be much broader. Ultimately, every soldier, every officer could be subject to the same, to arrest flying into any country. And, with the ability to identify people increasing, it puts them more and more subject to identification and to harassment, arrest, whatever they want to do. I agree with you, particularly the reaction of Trudeau, who completely endorsed the decision of the court, the Dutch, who said they wouldn't allow Israeli leaders, in this case Gallant and Bibi so far. I understand that others may be named into their countries. Britain equivocated, did not support it. France equivocated even more. Didn't say explicitly they would arrest, but they didn't say they wouldn't. The foreign minister of the EU said that every member state is obligated to abide by the court ruling. Of course, the United States was very strong, President Biden and members of the Senate and those who saw the incoming majority leader, Senator Thune's dramatic remarks, very forceful, actually on the day that he was named, but again this week, saying that if the current Senate doesn't take the action, and the House already passed a resolution to sanction the court and to take steps against the court, that they would do it immediately upon assumption of a Republican majority, which is January 1st, not January 20th, as people believe, because the Senate and the House, the Congress changes on January 1st,
right.
Which is important because it gains us three more weeks. But the reaction around the world of condemnation of Israel, as you know, the information that we have alluded to, that South Africa, which brought the case, was receiving money for this from Qatar and other sources. It's been now documented, and that the ANC received money, allegedly, and also even pointing to President Ramaphosa. So this is another factor that we will have to look at, how the court is manipulated, how the information supplied to it, and the rapidity with which they reached a decision. There were others who said that the court you know, should have waited and at least held more hearings and documentation. But when it comes to Israel, those standards don't seem to apply. So it does have broader ramifications than people understand, and that it is it's certainly in terms of reputational impact, it's very devastating, but it can have practical implications too. And, you know, for the Prime Minister of Israel, it also will justify for those who want to attack to say, well, you see that the court ruled that these guys are war criminals, and war criminals you didn't take action against. And so I hope people take it seriously enough. We continue to fight it. We're pressing for congressional action. There should be as many condemnations as possible, both in terms of targeting these individuals, but also what it does to Israel.
Well, maybe we can depend on the United Nations to condemn such a decision, although that looks more and more bleak because this week, in what would be considered another episode of international anti-Semitism, the United States casted the only vote against the Gaza ceasefire resolution at the UN. And I guess, by the way, if we compare, and I don't even know if it's a good comparison, it wasn't a time of war then, but if we compare the end of the Obama administration to the end of the Biden administration, we should be thankful the U.S. actually used its veto properly this time, right?
Absolutely. It's very important. And there are still a lot of people who question what the administration might yet do, whether there would be other resolutions, other things that would come up that they would take or not take action, that just sit on their hands and do nothing. And that too would be a reaction to this. So it's certainly, we welcome the fact that they took it. There were other actions this week by the United States sanctioning settlers and accusations against both individuals and construction companies, for instance, that work with them in Yilun Shomron. People were very concerned about the timing and the impact, and then that can be used again by the international courts as evidence to say that even the United States took this kind of action.
You know, there are those who loosely proclaim that everybody hates Jews, and I know that that's way too general a statement, but when you see the United Nations on this international level and you see the International Criminal Court on this international level taking this type of action, it is hard not to develop a paranoia, Malcolm, that much of this has nothing to do with the actual war or defeating the enemy. It just has to do with the fact that people can't live with Jews who, instead of cowering in a corner and are slinking away and are ready to be murdered, instead are showing strength and trying their hardest to defeat the enemy that's trying to kill them.
You know, they say that just because you're paranoid, it doesn't mean they're not chasing you. So they are chasing us, and it's Israel and us on one, and I hope, you know, we can drive that message home all the time, that Israel is only the excuse for being able to target the collective Jew rather than just the individual Jew. But you see the efforts in the Nazi marches this week, the demonstrations, the anti-Semitic incidents, the things on our campuses again this week. The fact is that being pro-Israel is good politics still in America, that the that certain political leaders have to learn it, but that 20 members of the Senate would join in a resolution to deny certain specific weapons. There were six resolutions that were initially introduced. Three were only actually acted on, and each one dealt with a specific weapon, with anti-tank, with mortars, stuff that's essential to Israel.
So maybe that's the reason that I saw different lists, because there were three different ones they voted on. Is that possible? I saw Cory Booker on one of them and not on another. Does that mean, was it a mistake, or he in reality may have voted for one and not others?
The other senator, the new senator from New Jersey, voted for one and did not voted against the other two.
That's important.
I don't think Cory Booker voted for any of them.
Oh, I saw him on a list. I saw him on a list. And again, I don't know if it was a mistake or not. It may have been a typo, the way things are published so quickly these days. But that's really important for people. I mean, obviously, we have a big base in New Jersey. That's really important for people to know and for people who are involved or want to be involved in being in touch with government officials in their state. That's really important. They should react to the new senator.
Yes, but the new senator will be out in January 1st. And Kim has been elected. I don't think that he will be like his predecessor. Menendez was very vocally supportive and a very strong supporter. So we have to, and the people in New Jersey have to work on it. I have to say that I think Governor Murphy did intercede. This was his appointee. The interim senator just to fill out till the elections of Menendez's successor. Right. So there were three votes. The votes ranged from 80 to mostly was 79 or 80 votes against and 18 to 20 votes for. And so right, if you saw different tallies, that's the reason. But the fact that it was brought up and that you saw the Republicans voted to a person against it, I don't think enough was done. But President Biden did come out against it. The administration did try to stop it. But, you know, you have these this hardcore extreme leftists, and I think it influences what others do. Who may be afraid of challenges from that sector. They shouldn't be afraid. Again, all of the analyses show that being pro-Israel was supportive. You know, there were those who this week came out and said that, including Zogby, who's James Zogby, who's a pro-Arab and anti-Israel activist and for decades and decades and decades headed a number of organizations. He is running for vice chair, I think, of the Democratic Party. And was saying that it was because she wasn't Kamala Harris and the Democrats weren't sufficiently responsive to the anti-Israel segments. The fact is that it's the opposite. I think that is true. That the that in many cases the swing vote was because still the vast majority of Americans remain pro-Israel. Wow. And that hopefully the young people, as they grow up and mature and start thinking and not just reacting, will also moderate their positions. It's a concern. It's something we have to work on. It's not something you take for granted.
Yeah, you have high hopes. You have high hopes for the younger generations. America's one and only Jewish Moments in the Morning radio program. Our listener-sponsored digital radio around the world, the web at NahumSiegel.com, the Nahum Siegel Network, and of course, the beloved NSN app. Our fundraiser is on. Those of you out there who... like all of our segments or any of our segments or some of our segments or whatever you like and enjoy on a Friday or any day here at JMNAM, please support our campaign, fjbunity.org, fjbunity.org. You know, it's funny that you mentioned the campuses and you mentioned the Nazi marches in Ohio, I believe, and you didn't mention what happened in Brooklyn this week. And I know that we don't, you know, we joke sometimes about in this segment, whether we talk about local stuff or not, but the reality is that this is really more than just a local story as far as I'm concerned. I mean, they go ahead, these pro-Palestinians, the ones who are supporters of Hamas, and they march through Jewish neighborhoods, neighborhoods you're very, very familiar with, may have been your own neighborhood, frankly. And I'm trying to get, and I heard this from a rabbi yesterday who called me, that they just don't understand what the reaction is from both the mayor's office and the NYPD. And I was trying to compare it to other types of infiltrations of neighborhoods that have happened in the past, so rare in New York City. Usually these demonstrations are in Times Square or other public places. What do you think? What do you think of the expected reaction of the mayor's office and the police and what actually did happen this week?
So I think it's a broader picture. The police have generally been very responsive to demonstrations, and you know they're stretched in. They say, and this was not anticipated to be as big as it was, I think, and it is really in a neighborhood just adjacent to where I live, very close to where I live. And the You know, there was, again, one of those real estate fairs where people come to look at possible housing in Israel, right. And it was the Kingsway Jewish Center. The fact that the demonstrators were able to get so close, they then, in fact, walked around down the streets of a Jewish neighborhood, intimidating and harassing the people who lived there, and that should never be allowed. When President Herzog spoke last Sunday night at a dinner I attended at the Plaza Hotel, the demonstrators were allowed up to the steps of the hotel. It was quite outrageous, I think. And when I came, a policeman saw me walking up, and he came down and said, "I know you, and please come with me." And he took me behind the barricades. But literally, the people coming into the dinner had to walk through the demonstrators, and the demonstrators kept moving around from one entrance to another. To harass and to demonstrate very loudly. But when you have the president of Israel there, there should be extra precautions, and they should have been marching a block away or a distance away. Yep. And the same thing was true at two other dinners I attended where they were demonstrating in the past week and got remarkably close to the people. And I think that this is a discussion we should have. And the new commissioner of police is certainly somebody who's responsive and sympathetic, and got on when at her initial press conference and said she said a mishaberach for one assault member of the force who was wounded, and used that term. And she comes from an amazingly involved family, a Jewish family, the Tishes. So the you know, somebody to talk to, and there are others in the department, certainly Richard Taylor and others who are on top of these issues generally. But I think that there's a policy decision here, and it's one that we have to make sure that the same standards are used, and that these demonstrators not be allowed to get so close to facilities. They have a right of free speech. They have a right to gather. I don't think that they had a permit to march down the streets, and the police, you know, you need large numbers of police to control an event like that, unfortunately.
Excuse me. Well, I think that what residents likely expect, and I'm not, this is not a condemnation of any local Jewish leadership group. Everybody was caught by surprise. But the area that you describe, and you know this firsthand, has a very active Jewish leadership group. Understandably so, and thank God for them. I'm sure they do amazing work, and you've mentioned some of the work they do on this show in the past. I would hope that they and their leadership are communicating these messages to City Hall and the NYPD. Can people listening now in the Flatbush Midwood area rely on that's happened?
Absolutely. As you know, I'm the chairman of the Flatbush Jewish Community Council, and we were on top of it. They were on top of it. Nobody anticipated the numbers, but there was a big counter demonstration. It doesn't get mentioned, but people did come out to counter demonstrate at the outside, and it was a nice turnout. But part of the advice is always not to escalate it too much, because it only then generates more confrontation. But I think we have to have a presence. We should not be afraid. We should be there, and the police have a responsibility to protect the right of people to march, but also to counter march and to protect the institutions.
Yeah, I think the
answer is yes to your question.
I think the residents are just concerned about next time. Like, they get what happened this time, but they're worried about next time.
This is not the first time, as you know, in Flatbush. They canceled one such event, which I did not think was the right decision to cancel it, but I understand why. Right. And this time there was no cancellation. But you're right, the expectation is a legitimate one, and there are ongoing discussions with the police. They're both at that day and thereafter. It's not that the police didn't respond or weren't responsive to the concerns, but I think that the turnout that was more than had been anticipated by everybody. And they're very vocal and not easy to control, but it's not just here. It's everywhere. And I get calls from communities all over. And, you know, even on the campus situations where police, when they're invited in, you know, have to come in significant numbers in order to counter the demonstrations.
Yeah, I get that. All right, a couple of things you got to clear up for us, because you know how it is these days. You see so much news, you don't know what to believe, and you're not sure what's true or not. Has the Hamas leadership, in fact, been kicked out of Qatar or not?
Yes, they are out of Qatar. They are in Turkey, the three leaders in particular. I can't say that everybody is out, but certainly the visible leadership is out. And they have indicated that everybody will, they're not going to tolerate them being there anymore. So they are in Turkey, where they have been before. Hamas leadership has been ensconced in Turkey. I don't think that they get the lap of luxury that they had in Qatar. And hopefully the flow of money will also be cut off and that their bank accounts will be seized. These guys are all billionaires today at the expense of the people. And it's something no ICC and ICJ and all the rest and all the campus demonstrators don't care about.
And we credit this to the Trump effect or not necessarily?
I think it helped expedite it. I think it was in the works and the but I do think that there is a Trump effect in discussions with leaders in the region. I hear it that in trying to anticipate what he will do and knowing that he will take a strong stand on such issues. But at the same time, they send a message that they, you know, want wars over, that they don't want to engage. So, you know, people can read it both ways, but I think the answer is yes. I think that it encouraged Qatar. I think there were discussions. I think there's a lot going on with informal approaches until the government is in place. But they seem certainly to be starting off running. And I think that you'll see that on the first day, many actions will be taken.
And it's interesting because, and I don't know if you agree with this or not, and you're right, after January 20th, it'll be a lot easier to see if this is correct or not. But for those who observed that this war, October 7th, likely set Israel back, God knows how many years, in the entire process of true peace in the region and with certain neighbors, and I think Qatar has always been on that list. I think the Trump effect might, you know, might shorten the time span of actually, you know, creating a more peaceful situation. And, you know, to some, this may, you know, sound obvious, but again, because of the war and the obligation that certain Arab neighbors feel they have to support the enemy, it would be significant if, in fact, the Trump effect would lead to quickening this entire situation and getting a real, you know, peace agreement like the Abraham Accords, you know, back on the table.
I think that's true. I think that many of them have to reconsider their positions.
Right.
And the fact that you have such a pro-Israel lineup of key officials, the Secretary of State, the NSC, all the other positions, many of the other positions, including the new nominee for Attorney General, is somebody who has described Israel as our best ally in the world and
Right.
has been vocally supportive. So that all those things send important messages. You know, we always have to think about how does the other side read it, not how we read it. And I expressed concern this week that we removed our other aircraft carrier from the region, so we have a lot of resources there. We have destroyers, we have the B-52 bombers, the B-2, we have the other resources that were added to the region, including the THAAD missile defense system. But to me, the symbolism and the effect of having aircraft carriers is very important. There is rotation, and the Navy has been very stretched. We only have, I think, 11 aircraft carriers in the world, and this should be, I hope, a priority of building more of them. That but the message when an aircraft carrier is moved out is something that makes a big impression on others. But I think that they know, and when the administration came out as they did at UN and others, that also makes an impression that we stand by Israel, that whatever tensions exist in the relationship doesn't affect how America perceives it and its willingness to stand by Israel. I hope that they will release the rest of the weapons that are being held.
Yeah, understood. Someone observed, and you know, I always think when it comes to the Pope that there's a confusion in terms of his real intent. And we've spoken about this in the past. But anyway, Pope Francis has called for a genocide investigation in Gaza. Someone actually said, and this is what I'm referring to, someone actually said to me they think that's a Trump effect, that this is his pushing back because Trump won in the United States and politically they would have preferred if the other side won. I have no idea if that's true or not. Again, I think it's really confusing when people try to analyze what goes on in the Vatican vis-a-vis Israel. Anyway, with all that having been said, what's your reaction to this outrageous claim by the Pope that there should be a genocide investigation in Gaza?
I don't believe that it's a Trump effect thing, because this is a book he's written. This is not a statement that he issued. It was released. That is in the book that's to come out in the early spring or late winter, I think February or March, in which he does call for this. And he says that others have charged. So we'll have to see when the real text comes out and know exactly what he said. But I think he was testing the waters. I think he was trying to send a message. I think the release of it at this time could be based on that, or that somebody in the Vatican hierarchy wanted to get this anti-Israel message out. It obviously is significant when the Pope says something. And, you know, there are other times he's had close relationships with hosting Israeli officials and certainly people in the Jewish community. But you know, when you see the general tenor in the world today, the inability of world leaders to stand up for moral positions when it comes to Jews in Israel, they put up smokescreen statements at times, but the question is, what are the real actions that they're taking? And we need the moral voices today to say that there is a difference between the firefighter and the arsonist. That has been blurred, and I think, regrettably, again, you have to see the real language, not the way the media portrayed it as. So I looked into it and found out that it was a book in which he quotes others and says that that should be investigated if there are, in fact, charges, war crimes being committed.
Interesting. All right. I'm glad you clarified that. And finally, it's funny, you just mentioned the inability of leaders to stand up. I've been meaning to bring this up probably the whole month of Tishrei, when we really weren't in touch because people wanted to know. Oh, they wanted to know two things back then we never got to. One was about the leadership of Mexico, because now I believe a Jewish woman leads Mexico. So they wanted to know your opinion on that. And the other was what's going on in Argentina. And I bring it up now in the context of the inability of leaders to stand up, because there are some leaders who stand up, because Argentina has pulled out of UNIFIL. I don't know if you know this off the cuff. I mean, UNIFIL is what? It's a troop. It's a force that takes troops from 5 countries or 50 countries or the entire UN. How does this work, UNIFIL up near Lebanon?
Okay, so on the first, what was the first thing you asked?
Well,
about?
I said that people were concerned, were curious about the changes in Mexico and Argentina in general.
Okay, so Mexico, right? So the fact that it's a Jewish woman, she is not pro-Israel. She's somebody of concern. And Mexico's positions generally have not been good, and I don't anticipate that they're going to be better. As opposed to Argentina, which is not good, it's amazing. And Milei didn't just do some of the, and he did all the things you said, but this week he came out, condemned the international court. He pulled some of his troops out of UNIFIL in protest. He has been sending messages of support that are really remarkable. And this is in Argentina, which wasn't reputed to be the such a Zionist state, supporting state, but you see that the people are going along with it, that the certainly his amazing and perhaps unprecedented in the world, such advocacy for the Jewish people in Israel and personal identification with it. So UNIFIL was created after, as a, like other United Nations forces, to try and enforce the peace between Lebanon and Israel. For those who have gone to the northern border and looked down on their camps, you see that they sit inside all day. They did not block and did not stand against the terrorists. And whenever there were confrontations, and there were even shootouts sometimes, they backed down. And their troops come from many places, including Italy, which is now also threatened to withdraw its troops. But Italy has said that they came under fire from Hezbollah troops and named it, but you didn't see an outrage or Security Council resolution or whatever. Right. But Italy, which has a favorable government right now, so it's made up of troops, many African countries, others that sent troops there. But, you know, they're not going to put their lives on the line.
Right.
There have been incidents. There have been times that they've been shot at. But the fact is that the proof is in 160,000 missiles, many of them across the Litani. The buildup of military capacity below the Litani River and between that and the border with Israel, which was supposed to be completely clear of this, and why Israel is skeptical of any UN arrangement or guarantee, because like other UN guarantees, they become meaningless. So you have an UNRWA where 100 of their people joined in the attack and 1,000 of them are involved with Hamas. So the skepticism is well earned.
Understood. All right. Malcolm has agreed to limit his intake of turkey on Thursday in order to join us next Friday morning. So some might think that we would not be presenting a weekly update next Friday. In fact, Friday of Thanksgiving, we will be presenting it, please God. And I thank you, Malcolm, for that. And also a tip of the hat to those who put together a 20,000-strong Shabbat Chayei Sarah in Hebron. It's good to have it back to the level it's always been at in the past, Malcolm.
Yes, it is, and people should understand that. I know my grandchildren have gone, and it's just an amazing experience. And I will limit the tryptophan effect so I can be up on Friday morning.
Although, if you make a mistake next Friday, you'd have a perfect excuse.
That's I always have an excuse. You know, at this hour on a Friday morning after a tough week, you know, it's always a good excuse. But I'm delighted to do it, and I expect that this week could be very eventful.
Oh,
and
boy.
Keeping on top of it, and most of all, that people will discuss this Shabbos with your kids. Please talk to them about this. They don't know. There are so many things happening, and they should see not just the headlines. We don't want to dissuade them and make them feel it's a burden to be a Jew. It's a victory. It's the best thing, a celebration about being Jewish. But they should know the facts and understand how Israel is carrying the world today in the war against terrorism.
Oh, no question about that. Thank you so much, Malcolm. Have a wonderful Shabbos. We'll speak again next week. Malcolm Homeline, weekly update, Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations, Friday morning, Erev Shabbos, Chayei Sarah. That's right. Chayei Sarah with candlelighting time at 4:12 in New York. 4:12, make sure you know when things start where you are. If you enjoy our segments, news analysis, music, Torah, on JM in the AM and round the clock during the week and weekends, please support our current campaign. We call it the year-end campaign for 2024. Go to fjbunity.org, fjbunity.org.